meantime, Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night and 32 Thoughts joins me on the broadcast. Friedge, how are you, bud?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. Still have no power at the house, and so I'm shuttling back and forth between the homestead and the studio here at Sportsnet. But on the scale
of... Yeah, you've been going extra mile.
It's okay.
Sure.
It's on the scale of people that are in a bad spot coming off of that big storm. I am very much thankful that everybody is healthy and there was no damage done to the property. Nonetheless, I want to get to the Blues and the Avalanche, but before we do that, let's have a quick look back at last night. And let's start with the Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes, and we'll get to the Battle of Alberta. You know, just making the point about a couple of players with the Rangers, Andrew Kopp, who's been, you know, not only great last night, but has been great all playoff long for the New York Rangers. Mentioned Adam Fox as well, 13 points in 11 games for Fox. He's been, or 10, no, he's got, 13 points in 11 games.
Close enough.
Yeah, you know what, at this time of year, close enough. I don't know the day, I don't know the time. I just show up and flip the microphone on and hope that I have something to say. Do you have a thought on Andrew Kopp specifically? I talked about trade deadline acquisitions, and listen, Claude Giroux was the big one this time around, and we'll get to him and the Florida Panthers in a second, but sometimes it's not the biggest deal that's the most effective, and if you look at trade deadline acquisitions, man, the Rangers got a good one in Andrew Kopp, and he's paid off dividends.
Yeah, he's, and I think he's been banged up a bit too. I suspect just watching him play at times, he's not anywhere close to 100%, which is, as you know, relatively normal for this time of year. I don't think anybody's close to 100%, but it can affect the impact you have on games here and there. And I thought he had a more impactful game last night. When I look at this series, to me, the bigger story is Carolina. I just can't figure them out. How can you be 6-0 and 0-5 on the road? Like, that isn't supposed to happen anymore. I mean, that used to be the case when, you know, fans were throwing, like, I don't know, heated coins at you or something like that. Like, that, like, home crowds in North America aren't like that anymore. I'm really confused watching the Hurricanes. I don't understand why they can't win on the road. I'll tell you this, like, I really think I'm beginning to wonder if the pace of the series is too fast for Carolina. And I never thought I would say that, but it just seems to me that the faster the series goes, the more the Hurricanes look like they're in trouble.
Which is weird because this is a team that's predicated on speed and skill. Like, if you look up and down their lineup, this is the team that Don Waddell, Eric Tulsky, everybody involved in putting these players on the Carolina Hurricanes, that's been the premium. We want quickness. We want skill. We're the Carolina Hurricanes.
But the thing is, they also play, and you talked about this actually on your podcast, or on our podcast, I guess.
One of your various podcasts.
Yeah. That they're a dump and chase team, right?
They are. That's
and,
how they get
the. You know,
zone.
The thing about that is that I think that if you look at the way the Rangers are put together on the blue line, you've got Trouba, who is a hard player. You've got Lindgren, who is a hard player. And you've got guys who can go back quick and get it, like Fox and Miller. And I just wonder if the Rangers are just prepared to deal with this or are able to deal with this. I just, you know, to me, the faster that game got last night, the more Carolina got into trouble. Hmm. And I, like I said, I didn't think I'd be saying that, but I'm kind of wondering it right now.
You know, talked about Andrew Kopp off the top, and
yep.
You know,
sorry, I completely derailed.
No, that's fine. I'm used to it. Say, oh, that's a cute question, Jeff. Let me take it somewhere else where I really want to speak. The Rangers did a really nice job at deadline, and I know you know Justin Braun, you know, bottom pairing defenseman. That's cool. Frank Vatrano really helps his team 5-on-5 as well. No one really talks much about Frank Vatrano. Mentioned Andrew Kopp as well. You know, we've made the point previous that this is kind of found money for the New York Rangers. Like, if you would have said at the beginning of the season, well, the expectation for the Rangers is they're going to get into the second round of the playoffs and they're going to compete against the Carolina Hurricanes and they're going to be 2-2 after four games, you would have said, wow, what happened? Well, you know, I'm just sure it can had a, you know, Vezina slash Hart style season, and Kreider had a season for the ages, and Zibanejad continued, and et cetera, et cetera, right? And Alexi Lafreniere started to pop, and they got something out of Capo Caco, et cetera, and Fox continued, and you mentioned Trouba and Miller. What's happened to the New York Rangers? Like, I always wonder, like, are they as good as we're seeing right now, or is part of this a mirage? Because to me, going into the season, like, this was not the expectation. And I can't help but thinking, if you're the Rangers, you think maybe we got here a year, maybe even 2 years sooner than we thought. Is this team this good?
I think some of what happened was there's a reason that Shesterkin's in the Hart Trophy finalists, right?
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons. There's no question about it. I remember late in the season, regular season, we did a segment on Saturday night where we're talking about top candidates for Hart Trophy, and I didn't mention Shesterkin, and I got texts for people watching in the States who were like, you have to have Shesterkin there. And maybe we didn't see him as much up in Canada. So, and the one thing is he played 53 games in the regular season. I know that's a big debate among some things, among some people. You know, goalies don't play as much as they used to. You know, we're not going to see the Marty Brodeur 75 games anymore. But 53, I think to some people, seem kind of low. Whatever the case, there's no question he's a big factor in that. I think that, like, I just wonder if, you know, I think some of their guys have really come on. I think Fox has been great in the playoffs. I think Lafreniere has really come on. I mean, look, they were in big trouble against Pittsburgh. If you look at the statistical numbers from that series, Pittsburgh outchanced them and outplayed them at 5-on-5. And Crosby got hurt, and Shesterkin got stronger. You know, Shesterkin was out of it in that series, and to his credit, he recovered. Domingue hit the wall. Jarry tried to come back gamely for game 7. Obviously, he didn't have it. You know, I just think that the Rangers, to their credit, as Pittsburgh faltered in that series, they took advantage of it. I think the thing is now is that what we're seeing is I think the Rangers' blue line is probably as close to a maybe 1980s or 90s blue line than we see in the NHL right now in terms of people who can punish you and people who are really skilled.
Mm.
And like I just look at this, like someone said to me this morning, you know, take a look at some of those Carolina attempts to get into the zone. They can't get around some of these guys. They just can't do it. And so I think that now the Rangers have to find a way to win a game on the road this series, which, as we've learned, is that it's very hard to do in Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think between their speed and maybe the physical nature of their blue line, Carolina's having a lot of trouble with that.
Okay. That's series tied up at 2s. The Oilers have the Calgary Flames on the ropes, 3-1. That game last night was a fascinating one. That was like a number of different games all wrapped up into one. There was the early game, which was the 3-0 Oilers game. There was the 3-3 game with the goal by Rasmus Anderson, which we'll talk about plenty. And then there was the response. The one person that I pointed out off the top here for each, and he's been there for 11 seasons, and he's seen a number of players come and go. He's seen coaches come and go. I can recall, as I'm sure you can, in Chicago with the Players Tour 3 years ago, I believe it was, but pre-pandemic, where, you know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins talked about the team wants stability more than anything else. When you have a game like that, you try to find the players that you're happiest for. I was happiest for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins last night. I know the first one was a gift. I get it. But 2 goals for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, 2 goals for Evander Kane as well. Connor with 2 assists, Leon Draisaitl with 3 assists. You know, some good games from a lot of Edmonton Oilers players. But the guy that I felt best for was Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Your thoughts on RNH?
I would agree with that completely. I think he started this year as the 12th most games in Oilers history. I'm not sure where he is right now, but obviously he moved up. I was thinking about that interview that we did in Chicago a few years ago. That was the one where CM Punk sat there and listened to all of
our interviews. That's right. Yes.
But I remember talking to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins about all the coaching changes. And again, if you think about it, there was another one this year. And, you know, the really funny thing about that with him last night was Scott Oak interviews him post game. And he's trying not to contain his excitement and be calm, but he just can't do it at the end. And like, I don't think that series is over. I thought Calgary was better last night. I mean, the one thing I would say about Tanev is, first of all, just what an effort.
Guts.
What an unbelievable effort.
Totally
you
gutsy.
Could see how much he was hurting. And I think our cameras got a great shot of him on the 2-0 goal, how clearly hurt he was. And I think if he would not have come back to the game after that, everybody would have understood. Everybody would have seen it and said, he just doesn't have it. He can't battle. He's trying, but he can't battle. And he was out there all the way until the end, and he was an effective player. I'm curious to see, does he come back for game 5? Does he play? Is there any question about whether or not he plays tomorrow night in Calgary?
Mm-hmm.
But I thought overall, I thought Calgary was much improved last night. Like that first period, I don't think they played terribly, but they gave up 2 kind of fluky goals and 1 on the power play. Like they kind of beat themselves. And then I thought it was fair for them to come back and tie it, even though the last one was a ridiculous goal. And then they just lose the game on a weird play where, you know, Stone and Shillington are playing together for the first time almost all game. So it was a weird night. I don't get the sense that, you know, I mean, obviously Edmonton's been the better team. I don't think that, you know, Calgary's going to be willing to concede by any stretch of the imagination. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if we go back to Edmonton on Saturday night for a game 6. I think if you're the Flames, you're probably reeling quite a bit. You can't believe that you're in this position, considering the way you won game 1 and the way game 2 started, but here you are. I just, there's some series I look at 3-1 and I say they're over. Like, I don't think necessarily Colorado and St. Louis is over, but I think it's a really tough path to see St. Louis winning that series the way the Avalanche are dominating them 5-on-5. I think a Calgary comeback is more likely than I think a St. Louis comeback would be. And we'll find out in 3 days if I'm right or wrong.
So further to our conversation about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Lance Kennedy, our technical operator, sends me this. This is the list of coaches that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has had so far in his NHL career. Tom Rennie, Ralph Krueger, Dallas 2, Aikens.
3.
Craig McTavish.
4.
Todd Nelson.
5.
Todd McLellan.
6.
Ken Hitchcock.
7.
Dave Tippett.
8.
Jay Woodcroft.
9.
He's been there 11. He's been there 11 seasons. He's had 9 coaches.
Wow. I think it's clearly his fault.
Clearly R&H's fault.
Strikes me as a really high maintenance guy.
I wonder, just as an aside, you know, having said this, someone's going to actually spit it back at us here on Twitter in a couple of seconds. I wonder which player in the history of the game had the most coaches.
You know, I'll tell you, someone asked me a good question. It's not exactly the same. But when Barry Trotz was fired in New York, someone said to me, is anyone even close to firing the same number of coaches that Lou Lamoriello's at?
It's funny, too, because what's the most? I think it's like 200, was it like 250 games that Jacques Lemaire had, which was number 1?
No,
Or was it more?
I figured this out. So Lamoriello, not counting Doug Carpenter, who he inherited,
right,
and himself, who he hired twice, I think he said 19 coaches. And Jacques Lemaire was 300 and something games, and that was when they won their first cup. That was the overlap. I think it was 1993 to 98 he coached. I want to say it was about 378 games, but I could be wrong on that. Mm-hmm. I don't have the sheet in front of me. I figured this all out. He's number 1. Trotz was actually number 2. He was 288 in New York, and 3rd was Babcock. I think he was 254. Because when he got to Toronto and he got to the island, he was much more judicious on his coaching changes than he was in New Jersey. Lemaire is number 1, and nobody in New Jersey was anywhere close to him.
Just as an aside, just a quick note on Lou Lamoriello, and I love having this conversation with people. We look at Lou Lamoriello now, as the general manager of the Islanders. He is a very safe, traditional, you know, he's the coach that a lot of people point to as like, you know, this is, you know, how you conduct yourself as a general manager. This is the model. You know, this is the one that everybody sort of genuflects towards. When he was hired by the New Jersey Devils, like that was a out-of-the-box hiring like crazy. That was like one of the biggest non-traditional hires of all time because he comes in from Providence College. And the hue and cry was, what are the Devils thinking? This guy hasn't spent any time in the NHL and he's going to run an NHL team?
Well, don't forget when he was initially hired, he was hired as the president.
Yeah.
He wasn't hired as the GM. And then he hired himself as the GM.
It's always a good move.
Yeah.
I've done an exhaustive search and I've decided I am right for this job.
I do a lot of searches like that, I have to tell you. But people forget that. Like, I actually forgot that until I was going through his coaching history. I went and I was reminded of that. I'd completely forgotten about that.
Like, anytime, you know, a name pops up that's like, oh, you can't hire that. This person hasn't spent any time in the NHL. Oh, this is a out-of-the-box hire. I always think Lou Lamoriello is now considered the standard. And when he was hired, he was an out-of-the-box hire. It was, out of the, scribbling outside the lines. Okay, tonight, Colorado, looks like they're trying to punch their ticket here to the conference final. First time since 2002. The venue shifts to Ball Arena, 3-1 series lead. We saw last game the Blues were more interested in revenge and chasing Nazem Kadri around the ice. What do you expect tonight from the St. Louis Blues? I can't imagine that, you know, even as old school as Craig Berube is, that he would say, you know what, we're out for vengeance. You know, we're looking for Kadri tonight. This has to be a hockey game for St. Louis for each.
I don't even think that Craig Berube would have felt that going into game number 4, and it still got out of there, out of hand on them. They lost their minds. I think, first of all, you're right. They have to stop worrying about getting revenge on Kadri for whatever they feel they need to do, and they have to focus on winning the game. They cost themselves that game. It's a close game in the second period when they lose their minds, and they just handed Colorado several opportunities, and they weren't catching up on 3 goals. You know, the other thing that they have to do is they have to start doing, like, Colorado is caving them in 5-on-5 in this series. St. Louis power play is excellent. That's what got them in the series against Minnesota too. They were in trouble early 5-on-5 in that series, but their power play did it for them. But right here, they're getting nothing done 5-on-5, and their power play is keeping them alive. That's got to change. The other thing that's happening here that's interesting is, you know, for Husso, and I give credit to producer Matt Marstrom who came up with this, Husso didn't play Colorado this year. I think he's played them twice. I think he played them once last year, and I think there was another as a start. And I think there was another time last year where he came in for like 20 minutes in relief in a game that the Blues were getting clobbered. And I just think that, you know, it's always harder to get into the playoffs and experience it for the first time as a number one goalie to see what it's really like. But I think it's even harder when, especially against a team like Colorado, when you've never really played them before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's basically played, I think, 80 minutes against Colorado in his career. And I just think that's really hard. Like, you go in there again against them this year, one in a pinch hit situation because Binnington's hurt, and you haven't seen them. You don't know them. I mean, that, I think there are some teams you could probably handle that with, but I think that would be a team that would be really challenging to play against without a lot of experience against them. And I just think Husso's got to find a way, and I think it's going to be a huge challenge for him.
You know, as one goaltender told me, you know, Husso has issues with rebounds, and hasn't been in a position where he has to make the huge save, and now he is, and there's a stress that comes along with that. I wonder too if, you know, the game within the game, you know, Nathan McKinnon up against Ryan O'Reilly. Last game, that did not work out very well for St. Louis at all. I wonder how much, if that continues at all, although Jared Bednar controls it because Colorado is at home. We'll see what happens.
But I think generally O'Reilly has played McKinnon pretty tough.
He's excellent.
Yes, the other night it was McKinnon's way, but there's been other nights in this series where it's gone O'Reilly's way. I think when you have a player of that type of ability, and I'm talking about O'Reilly in this case, as good as McKinnon is, you take your chances. That's why when Calgary should have pulled Markstrom last night. I understand they did it again with Vladar in game three, but at some point in time with your season on the line, you have to depend on the guy who got you there and the guy you're paying to get you there.
Yeah.
You say, you know what, if we're going to lose, we're going to lose with this guy. And even though McKinnon had the matchup against O'Reilly the other night and played well, I'm pretty confident in feeling that if I'm the Blues and I'm going down, then I'm going down with O'Reilly.
You are modulating hard on your Opal app right now.
Oh, Reed. Sorry.
No, there you go. We got you back. Real quick, Blues Avalanche.
I must have walked into a bad corridor of the house.
Don't worry, but in the mansion, find another maybe. find another area of the mansion, Elliot. Real quick, Blues Avalanche tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern, CBC and Sportsnet. Thoughts on some of the closeout interviews tonight, whether or from this morning in Florida. Joe Thornton, going to talk to his family, see what the plan is next. Claude Giroux, same thing, taking a few weeks, had a great time in Florida. Barkov talking about learning a lot of lessons from the Tampa Bay Lightning. Sergei Bobrovsky talking about positives. Do we read anything into any of this for the Florida Panthers?
I think everything, like the one thing I was curious most was about what Thornton said, that he hasn't made any decisions yet and he'll take his time to think. I just wonder what it's going to cost to keep Giroux. You know, the Panthers have a lot of skill, and Giroux's a great player. I'm just wondering if he's a luxury they can afford.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think that, you know, what we're learning, I mean, nobody knows how to beat Tampa right now, but I think what they're showing everybody is that your star players have to play at their best and extremely edgy and do things that star players historically didn't always have to do, right? Or weren't really known for.
Yeah.
You have to play tough. You have to play hard. You have to block shots. And then you have to be great when you're called upon to be great. But I think you need depth. You need that second or third line that, I mean, not having Marchment there, I don't think it turns the series around. But that's the kind of player that it really hurts you when you don't have him against Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
And I just look at Giroux and I say, for what it's going to cost you, you already know you have great offensive players. You already know you can score. Are you going to have to put that money towards, you know, for lack of a better term, two Nick Pauls as opposed to one Claude Giroux? I think when I look at them, asset allocation is going to be the question that I'm thinking about. And, you know, the other thing, too, is the coaching staff. You know, we haven't heard. Andrew Burnett has a contract next year, but it's as an assistant coach. I do believe there have been talks to him about extension. But, you know, I think after a series like that one, and it's not all on him. I don't think that anybody would feel that way, or you'd be crazy to feel that way. But I got to think in Florida, they're thinking about it.
Yeah.
And it's really tough. The guy got nominated for the Jack Adams this year, but these kinds of losses, they can send franchises in different directions.
They sting. As we wish you good afternoon, Elliot. So Lance is doing the full research on this as the show continues. But to the question of which player has had the most coaches in his career in the NHL, right now, and again, final tabulation still to come, clubhouse leader with 25 head coaches in his career.
Glenn Sather?
Mike Sillinger.
No.
Mike Sillinger.
Oh.
But we'll see. We'll see if anyone's topping that one. Lance is hard at work.
No wonder the commercials are all running improperly because Lance is doing research of hockey stuff.
Well, someone's got to do prep on the show, and it's not going to be me or you, damn it. So Lance will do it.
Sure.
Lance will do it. All right.
Good job, Lance.
That's right. He's our secret weapon. And we'll be watching tonight on the Magic Eyeball. It is CBC and Sportsnet, 8 o'clock Eastern, the Blues and the Avalanche. Have a great afternoon, Friedge.
You too, my man.
There he is. Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada.